meeting to order. Before you, you have an agenda. And if there are no questions, no objections, any comments, do we accept the agenda provided? Hearing none. Before we get started, I think it's appropriate, I think this is our first public meeting, and we'd like to welcome Mr. Richard Searles to WMATA and Finance Committee and all that you have thus in front of you. Thank you for joining us. And next on our agenda is the approval of the minutes of March 4th through the 25th. Starting with the 4th, are there any comments, any changes, or motions? Hearing none, no objections. The minutes are approved. Is there a motion?
So moved.
And second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And moving to March 11th, questions? Motion?
Moved.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 And the minutes of the 25th.
Move those.
Second by?
Second.
Mr. Daly, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Today's agenda, we're going to try and we have a couple of action items on. We will begin with the first action is the acceptance of a staff report for the public hearing on the FY 2011 budget. And we have concluded with our hearings. Ms. Kissel, give us a report on the report.
Thank you very much. And actually, I'd like to ask Doug Harris to come up and join me. Doug actually was the staff member responsible for putting together the report that you see before you. And I'll take you briefly through it. I'm sure you'll have time to. This is the first time you'll have seen it.
This is just the first time
all of us have seen it, right? So we'll have time to. I'm sure you want to have time to review it. But basically, the public comment period, as you know, was held public hearings between March 6th and April 6th. We had six separate hearings, two in each jurisdiction. We had received 5,475 inputs, which is extremely large. And I think that was actually very good feedback that we received and participation. Over 1,800 received at public hearings were in writing, and then another 3,600, almost two-thirds of the comments we received on our online survey, which was very, very helpful in compiling the information. We actually were copied on over 1,200 letters that customers or riders sent to their jurisdiction officials, which was also probably a record amount of letters that we received. On the next page, of all the inputs, predominantly almost 80%, over 1,400 were specifically opposed to the recommended reductions in rail and bus that were in the docket. Over almost 60% asked that the local jurisdictions increase their contributions to the metro operating budget. And then over 1,800 of the public hearing comments that were written were actually, these are the jurisdictions split, if you will, almost 45 or 47% in Maryland and 25% in from the district, and then another 12% from Virginia. And then the balance were just unidentified people testifying or speaking without any jurisdictional reference. The online questionnaire input, as you can see here, about 80% were in favor of the off-peak fare increase that was in the docket. Almost the same amount were in favor of the Metrorail peak fare increase that we actually recommended. And then the Metrorail peak of the peak fare increase, there was also a favorable comment about that. In some of the detail in your staff report, you'll see whether or not people commented specifically on the amount of the fare increase. I don't have that in this general presentation, but you can see that in your staff report if people actually commented. In terms of local governments, should increase their contributions. Again, it was almost over 70% in favor of that. And then Metrobus boarding charge increases, again, 70% in favor of an increase in the boarding fare charge.
Can I just give me a question?
Yes.
I chaired a hearing in the District of Columbia, and that was the only hearing I went to, so I'm not sure what happened everywhere else, and so I can't speak to that. Mm-hmm. But there was nothing, let me say again, nothing approximating this type of sophistication at the hearing I chaired.
Yes, these are the online questionnaires that we compiled. Yeah,
but I think you should make that very, very clear that I see you have it online, but
yes.
But we also had people who came to the hearing.
Yes.
And you know, there were comments about, yes, let's have fare increases rather than service reductions. But there wasn't this type of delineation, is all I'm saying.
Yes.
At the hearings themselves, it just didn't exist.
I agree.
And that's why we separated them, because they're really, very two different sort of types of information. With the questionnaire, people have the complete docket and could focus on each individual part.
I'm just adding
the hearings are just
about
different.
The oral testimony.
Second?
I'm just making the point about the oral testimony.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. You're absolutely right. These are specifically online survey responses that we are speaking about here.
Mr. Benjamin?
On the peak of the peak fare increase, which was clearly very attractive in many ways, I was of the impression that we don't yet have the technical capability to actually implement it. Is that right or is that wrong?
We actually will have the technical capability to implement it. We've actually, before we put it in the docket, we actually reviewed this with our technical engineering team. And their response was, yes, we could do it. It may take a little time to do that. And we'll talk about that later in terms of how much time we need to have the board to make that decision so we can actually implement that.
But you're saying that we do now have the capability to do that today if we had enough time to actually do it?
I did not say that.
Okay.
I said that our engineering said that we will have the capability to do that by the time we implement.
You're saying that by July 1st you will have that capability?
That's correct.
And that is because what is it that we're going to get between now and then?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, I thought this was tied to the introduction of Next Fare 4.
The Next Fare 5, yes.
Next Fare 5, I'm sorry. And is Next Fare 5 in?
Next Fare 5 is not completed yet, and that's why the peak of the peak would have to be put in place. If we put in place the peak of the peak pricing, we could do it, and this is based upon our technical engineering. But what could happen is some portion of delay on some of the other implementation on Next Fare 5. And I'm not prepared to talk about that, but that's the issue that we're having.
I guess I'm confused. Are you saying that we could accelerate this faster than Next Fare 5, or we could accelerate this portion of Next Fare 5, but we've never really done it, and we don't have it in place now?
We've never really done it. The engineering says that technically we can do it, but we have not done it. So we're actually now dealing with a system where we have a Next Fare 4 system. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of upgrading it to Next Fare 5, and that'll be upgraded late spring and summer, as we have communicated. So on top of that, we're now putting in place something that we've never done before. So technically, they say they can do it by July 1st, but they have not done it. So they would like to have as much time as possible so that they have no error in implementing it by July 1st.
That's I'm just concerned that the basic technology, the Next Fare 5 technology, is not really there yet. And we haven't checked that out yet. So once you have that, then you take this next step, right?
As I said, our technical engineering people said that they can implement peak of the peak pricing with the technology that we have now. I mean, with the
Next
new technology, smart, and Next Fare 5. Yes, that's correct.
Say that again. With Next Fare 5 or Next Fare 4?
With Next Fare 5. And Next Fare 5 is being developed and will be ready in late spring and in the summer, in time for when we are going to be doing this increase.
Can I just express my concern that our past experience with implementing these changes is that they rarely occur at the speed that we think
they will? I totally agree. I mean, we're doing something new. We're doing something in the middle of a major development in software where we have a planned schedule and we've had some delays in that. So the request that I've had from engineering, and I agree with them, is give us as early notice as possible if the peak of the peak pricing is going to be implemented, so we have enough time to do it.
Okay, and we will have a discussion about some of these other items later in the agenda. So I think your question is very appropriate.
Yes.
As to what people said and the like, the questions about all of those things we'll talk about as we can get through the agenda or at subsequent meetings. Okay. And this one is for an acceptance of the report. Go ahead.
So on the next page, continuing on the online questionnaire, the boarding charge, there was a 67% favorable comments on boarding charge for the airport shuttles that we had in the docket, as well as a 64% express boarding charge increases. There was favorable comments on that on the survey. And also there was favorable comments over 60% to use additional capital funds in the operating budget. As you can see, when you will look at your staff report, there's a distinction here, and I'll call it out now for you, but that 61% makes up a couple of different things. About 14 or 15% made the comment specifically that as long as you use under $30 million. Then there was another group that said about another 15% that said you can use capital funds as long as you pay it back. And then there was another group that said you can use more than $30 million. So there was a very, there was a distinction on that, and actually we lay that out in your staff report. You can take a look at that. Also, there was in favor of increasing metro access fares that were recommended, and then a 23% favorable comments on the daily parking rates at the metro facilities. So in total, this is just the breakdown of the online survey questionnaires and how it looks. Actually, it's almost a third if you look at it in terms of all the jurisdictions. It was, then that's how those online surveys were participated in. On the next page, just the, again, the copies of the letters that we received that riders sent to their jurisdictional folks, officials that we actually received copies of. And again, we just have a breakdown of the jurisdictions on where those letters went. And actually, that is the brief presentation I have on the staff report. I think that it will take some time to review it and read it, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have over the next week or so to clarify any issues that you may have on that.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. And the staff report was just received, and so a discussion as to the various comments that were presented will can be answered by either questions directly or subsequent meetings. And with that,
Chair. Yes? Yeah, I just want to share one thing, if I may, please.
Please do.
From the hearing that I chaired, is that the thing that I heard most often from the witnesses was advocacy for, quote, dedicated funding. And I was pressed at various points to interrupt and say, no, that's not what you mean. You mean dedicated tax funding. But I didn't do so because it would have been inappropriate. But the fact of the matter is that that's what people, I think, were really advocating for, is that this situation where every single year we cobble together in a patchwork quilt fashion monies from here, there, and so forth to make up the revenues that established the metro budget, that there ought to be a dependable, dedicated regional tax of some kind that is committed to metro operations. And I think, I don't know how this comes across in the staff report. I'm gonna want to read the staff report. But that's the message that I got. And by the way, as a member of the DC Council, I'm gonna be exploring this very issue in terms of turning to my colleagues and saying, can we take a step now, and hopefully other jurisdictions will consider it also, to establish a dedicated tax on a regional basis. One jurisdiction, I don't think we could do it effectively. But if all of us acted in concert, we could establish a regional tax of one kind or another that would be dedicated to metro operations. And I think this is something that came directly out of the hearing, and it's something, just to let you know, that me and my staff are actively considering at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Benjamin.
I do
did want to comment that this is one of those issues that the Blue Ribbon panel that we had just a little while ago looked at in great depth, and it's worthy, as you move forward, Mr. Graham, to take a look at their analysis of what potential regional taxes could be, how they would be implemented, what the implications of them would be. I would also point out that one of the things that we often do is we say a dedicated tax or dedicated funding for operating would be a really, really good thing for us to have. And there's truth to that. But you also always have to be prepared for the downside, which we have now seen in most of those transit systems around the country that do have a dedicated tax. For almost all of those, they have, well before we've had the problem, seen a decrease in their subsidy because those tax revenues have gone way down. So they've had to do the difficult things that we're doing right now earlier than we and in greater amounts. Because the one upside of a dedicated tax is, yeah, you know that as long as that money is there, you're going to get it. The downside of it is when tax revenues go down, as has happened throughout the country and certainly in this region, then the transit system gets less money. And we at least now, because of the commitments that our various jurisdictions have had to transit and to metro, we've at least been able to hold it constant so that we don't have a decrease. So you always have to be careful about what you wish for. There's a clear example throughout this country that dedicated taxes are wonderful in good days, and they're deadly in bad days. And right now is one of those examples. And one of the positive things I've always felt is because of that strong commitment that our jurisdictions have, we in fact don't cobble together the funding. We in fact get very good commitments, and in good days, those numbers go up dramatically. And in bad days, we limit our losses. So this is one worth looking at carefully. And the other thing worth looking at carefully is the Blue Ribbon panel that we had that looked at specifically this issue was unable to determine a tax that would work regionally and backed off on the issue. And that wasn't because they didn't want to do it. They just couldn't find a good mechanism that would actually work.
Mr. Downey.
I just add one thought to that, and I do believe that looking at dedicated sources is worth doing, but I also would note there is risk on the upside as well. I have the experience of when your dedicated taxes are doing well, other forms of support disappear, they don't come back, and you become increasingly dependent on them.
No, they backed off.
Thank you. I think we have this item as action to accept the report, and I think we'll have more discussion about the content of the report. I just wanted to comment that in chairing the hearing in Virginia, in Fairfax County, and hearing the outcomes of the others, I think the most consistent message really was the reliance of the system on the region and the angst that our customers have with regard to how they will be able to rely upon this system. And I think on the funding issue, I think the one good news piece is that our customers are now able to articulate one of the most important things that affect us, and that is the funding source. But we also have to keep in mind, while our contribution has remained flat, our ridership and our dependence on this ridership has grown tremendously. So. We have a lot of work to do in both those sides there. Is there a motion to accept the report as presented?
Well, how can we do that?
We're only accepting it. We're not approving it. Oh. We're just simply accepting it. And that is
as presented without any endorsement whatsoever.
That's exactly right. It has not been read, and we were not presented other than the analysis that's given here. Is there a motion?
So moved.
A second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Any opposed? Thank you. The second item is a presentation on amendment to the budget for the two DC reimbursement capital projects. This is a DC project, and it's a transferring funding in order to move forward to reallocation of funds for the Anacostia light rail project.
Madam Chair, in the interest of time, we have the District of Columbia wishes to make a change in this, which I think will be acceptable.
Okay, would you?
Which is that we want to take this entire amount and put it for the time being in the DC TIF at Winthrop Lamar. And we have some legal clarifications that we want to see made, we want to have in hand before we make a decision, a specific decision. So these are balances that are available to the District of Columbia, and we just want to deposit the balances in the DC TIF fund for a period of time awaiting the legal clarification.
Okay. Mr. Graham has moved motion that the funds be moved, and that you would like at this time that they go through DC TIF.
Okay. Without specification.
Okay. And by the time this gets to the board, clarification will be time then. Will that be
perhaps, perhaps not.
Okay.
But we may go forward with simply that being done.
Okay.
In terms of
questions? I have a question because it was brought to my attention. We have a resolution in here regarding the amounts and the description of the meet. That's the amount. And there is the blue sheet. It's not a blue sheet, it's a correction, is there? Is the blue sheet the correction?
The blue sheet should be the correction.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, all those in approve it. Those opposed? All right, that moves forward and with the change there. The second one is the Alexandria Crystal City Comic Yard. Again, a reimbursable project. Is there a motion at this time to establish this reimbursable project for Atomic Yard, Mr. Buell?
Madam Chair, I certainly support this and encourage the committee to move forward with the recommendation to fund this. I mean, not fund it, but to allow this project to move forward.
Madam Chairman, I move approval.
Okay, second.
Second.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The last item here is scheduled as an action item, and we want to go through the capital budget reprogramming. And this action moves us into one, reprogramming and amendments, and also a different approach to utilizing those funds and categories. And so our presentation is on that capital reprogramming budget. And Ms. Kissel, if you could begin the presentation.
I will. Actually, I will have Matt Brown, Managing Director for Capital, take you through this. I will say that over the last year, we have actually spent a lot of time on capital, which is a very good thing. This is the last year of our funding agreement, and we have actually been spending a lot of time on capital for a variety of different reasons. One, to make sure that we actually have our spending where it needs to be. Two, we have proper delivery of the projects in place. And as we enter into the next agreement, we want to ensure that we actually have transparency. We're actually bound by doing a reconciliation at the end of Metro Matters, which we are prepared to do. So part of this presentation that you will see today is actually kickstarting that a little bit early so that we can anticipate a very smooth reconciliation and a smooth transition into our next six-year program. So with that, as an opening, I will have Matt Brown take you through what we intend to do here, or recommend to do.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. The request before the board is to reprogram funds within the IRP program within Metro Matters, and also to amend the capital budget to include $500,000 from two sources, a federal security grant in the amount of $60,000, and a payment received from a settlement for $452,000 for the Series 5000 rail cars. Before we go through the presentation, we just wanted to provide a brief glossary of terms. We found that this has been helpful in prior meetings, so that there's a broad understanding of the language that we're using. A budget amendment is where the total amount of the budget is increased or decreased, and that would be the case for the $512,000 we spoke about, the federal security grants, and the 5,000 rail cars. A reprogramming is the transfer of funds between elements in the program. There's a program management category that's used within Metro Matters. It's IRP program management, It includes many things, including financing costs, overhead costs, project administration costs. It also includes a category of expenditures called pre-Metro Matters. These are projects that began before the Metro Matters agreement was signed. There are about $500 million worth of expenditures that were rolled into the Metro Matters program. Thus far, they have shown up as a single line. They include a variety of projects, everything from 2,000, 3,000 rail car rehabs, work on Smart Trip, elevator, escalator work. It's a broad variety of projects that have been included in the Metro Matters program. Finally, Capital Ready project. Our budget is on a expenditure basis, and so we find ourselves sometimes where projects are either moving more quickly or more slowly than anticipated. The purpose of this reprogramming is to move funds into capital-ready projects that we need to do now.
Mr. Down.
Just a question. On the definition of budget amendment,
yes.
Go back to that. Yeah, there's an either after the comma, but I don't see the or. I can't quite make sense out of that sentence.
I believe it should say either by increasing or decreasing the total amount of the budget. So I apologize for that. So a budget amendment, for example, we did one previously where we included $62 million of safety and security grants. That was considered, as I understand it, a budget amendment because it increased the
it
total.
It increased both the funding and the project.
Right. And that differs from a reprogramming, which is the movement of funds within the approved amounts.
Madam Chair, I do believe that sentence would make sense if it read decreases or the addition of a new project. That's where the or should be instead of.
Apologize for that.
Or the addition of a new project.
So the board has taken two actions. The first is the rollover of budgets. Go to the next slide, please. The first is the rollover of budgets from the previous fiscal year. This is something that we've spent a lot of time on this spring, talking about unexpended funds in previous year's budgets. Those funds are carried forward or rolled over from one fiscal year to the other. The next are budget resolutions, and this board has passed two budget resolutions. There was one amendment and one reprogramming, and there's some detail on those in the next slide. The budget amendment related to the Homeland Security grants, and this was the amount of $60 million that was included in the current year budget, the FY10 budget. These were funds that were granted to us from the Department of Homeland Security, and that was accepted by the board. There was also reprogramming for the power distribution unit. That was the unit that failed in this building, and that was a reprogramming of $4 million from various projects in order to allow that work to proceed this year. As Ms. Kissel mentioned, we're moving from the six-year Metro Matters program into a new funding agreement, and that's something that we'll talk about later. The board policy that relates to reprogramming actually dates from 2000, so that's the 2000 in the board policy number. So the reprogramming policy is actually quite old, predates Metro Matters. That policy required board action for the initiation of new projects, an amendment to the fiscal year's total budget, that's something we just spoke about, and reprogramming actions within a given year of $200,000 or more between projects. Subsequent to that policy, again, we've implemented Metro Matters. We've changed from an obligation to an expenditure-based budget. The board has made changes to our procurement policy. So now our procurement policy allows for contract modifications up to just under $1 million or 10% of the original contract value. So I think it's time that we take a look at our reprogramming policy, and we're headed in that direction with the new funding agreement. And there's some language on the right that is it's preliminary language from the new funding agreement. That proposes a percentage threshold. We haven't specified a percentage yet, something that we're working out with the jurisdictional representative. But what we're really trying to do is strike a balance here. We have a capital program that's an expenditure-based program. As I mentioned earlier, that means that during a year, we'll have projects that will move either more quickly or more slowly than anticipated, and there may be cash needs in a year that may or may not increase a total project budget. We also may have instances where a project budget will need to be increased or decreased, either with the deletion of work or the addition of work or the identification of new work. And what we're really trying to do, both with the new agreement and with the new programming policy that we'd like to bring to the board before July, is to strike a balance in order to provide flexibility to staff to implement projects, but also to ensure that the board and the jurisdictions continue to have involvement in policy decisions that are made. And so that's some of the proposed language for the next policy.
As you go through this, we're really talking of two things. One, we're talking of actually the recommendation or an action to reprogram, and we're talking about restructuring or recategorizing as to how we will future do reprogram.
Right, and I think that's important. I mean, one of the reasons that we're bringing this action forward is we're following the old reprogramming rules. We're in a slightly different environment because now we're on an expenditure-based budget. We're at the end of Metro Matters. We've learned a lot from Metro Matters, and I think it's time that we take a fresh look at best practices from other governments, look at the best practices from our jurisdictions, frankly, about what is allowed with the movement of funds between projects for cash flow needs or for project needs when projects come in higher than anticipated.
And let me raise the question that I think has been raised regarding for the current Metro Matters and reprogramming, which would be this action under the current, right?
Yes.
Under that structure, are there any legal barriers to us reprogramming as we are looking at it today?
I don't believe that there are, but I would ask Ms. O'Keefe to address that question specifically.
Mr. Benjamin first, and then Mr. Green.
Just a clarification. So all of the changes are being made within a program category,
within the IRP program category.
Yes. So we're moving money within that category. If we had moved any of it beyond the category, then we would have to go back to the jurisdictions. But as long as we're staying within that category, we're okay. Is that right?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And so the buses, for instance, that we're talking about, there are two sets of buses. There are the replacement buses, which are in the IRP, and the expansion buses, which are a separate category. What you're saying, or whatever we call it there, what you're saying is these are replacement buses that
within
you are pulling money from, but we're going to replace the buses at a later date anyway.
Right. Right. And the other piece of this is that at the end of this fiscal year, we anticipate that there will be a new agreement and the proposed capital program that you've all been given a copy of includes all of the what we would call tail expenditures. Any expenditures that we plan to make beyond the current fiscal year have been included in this project. That goes back to the comment about pressing reset on our capital program. To this point, we've had pre-Metro Matters projects, we've had Metro Matters projects. We're really, really trying to get them all in a box. And call them what they are, they're capital projects. They have various sources and uses of funds. But we're really trying to press reset on the program. So, but Mr. Benjamin, to your specific point, the buses that we're talking about here are within the IRP. They're the IRP category, separate from the other categories.
So that does not require us to go back to the jurisdictions.
That's my understanding.
And you just raised another issue, which is an important one. Mr. Downey asked for an analysis of sources and uses of funds in the next program that we're going to be undertaking. I don't think we've seen that yet, so that would be helpful.
The capital budget as presented shows the overall sources and uses for the program, the sources being the 5307, 5309 grants from FTA, the dedicated funding, the jurisdictional match, and the system performance funds, and then the uses are the project expenditures. What we have not provided, and we are working to provide, is a sources and uses statement for each project. And that is something that it will take some time, given some of our system improvements that we're going to be making, that will allow us to provide more detailed information.
We're going to actually attempt to provide this, which we're doing currently. But actually, and I've mentioned this before, because our system does not allow us to actually earmark specific funds to a project. And actually what we end up doing it, and this might be more detail than you look for, but we actually end up, when we look to draw down on the formula funds, we actually have already expended the money. And we have expended the money in some, if it's not earmarked to a certain fund, it'll just be expended to some account. And then when we draw down on the money, we actually have to do a reverse journal entry to then earmark that particular project to the appropriate eligible expense. That's very time consuming, and it's not best practices, which is why we're actually modifying our system to accommodate for really what is best practices.
I don't think either Mr. Downey or I were really looking for
sources
and uses by project.
Okay, well, that's good.
By year, I think we were, and I don't remember seeing it by year, so maybe afterwards you could show me where that is.
Absolutely.
And then particularly when it gets to the jurisdictions, what's everybody share?
The jurisdictional share is something that was not included in the budget book. That's correct. But we did show...
That's a real important one for those of us that have to agree something.
Absolutely. We have shared that information with members of the JCC. There's still some movement going on in the capital program, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we have shared that on a staff level.
We'll be showing an April 22nd presentation of the full capital program, where we are today, and we'll actually be able to include some of the comments that you have today.
The next table is
Mr. Graham did have questions.
First, the language in the proposed new capital funding agreement. You intend to bring this for formal approval here before you put it into the agreement, because you're creating an important policy here. So obviously, the board has an interest in it, right?
The board will approve not only the Metro Matters agreement, but also we will propose a reprogramming policy.
But I think it would be helpful before you negotiate all of this. It's best to have us on board before the negotiations, my view, rather than bringing us a fait accompli, which, you know.
We intend, and to that point directly, Mr. Graham, we intend on April 22nd to provide you the latest draft of the multi-year funding agreement, which will have this appropriate language, so you'll have time to review it.
I appreciate that. And here's the other, my experience on this board is that when we get into the capital budget discussions, we seem to slip into a kind of a mist. You know, where sometimes it's a heavier fog than at other times, but we don't really understand what's going on. And what we need here is some plain description of what is not going to be done and what is going to be done.
I think you'll see that in subsequent
pages. And I have the resolution in front of me, which is what, of course, the board is being called upon to approve. And so we see that there's decreases and increases, but I'd like to know what the practical impact is. You know, of the, I don't need to know every last nickel, but I need to know the thrust of what it is that we're doing here with this $29 million new program, and what is it that's going to be put off in terms of particulars.
We'll address that.
Well, can you, is that coming?
I will, if you'll allow me in subsequent slides, I can speak to that. This is a summary. It's probably too small for you to read, but it just shows the adopted budget, carry forward that I spoke about, the security grant amendment, and then the amendment that was already approved by the board for the power distribution unit, and then where we are with the current budget. That's just for information purposes. The next slide just gives a little detail on the carry forward. Again, we spent a lot of time on that this year. IRP was $18 million, almost 19 in carry forward. The 8-car train capital initiative, which is separate from the IRP, $500,000. And then the IRP program management category of $15 million. So then we get to the proposed reprogramming. And the first slide shows the froms and the twos, and then subsequent slides show some of the detail. So we're proposing $29.4 million to be moved from the projects that are on the left side of the screen to the right. So we will be moving, we are proposing the movement of funds from rolling stock bus, from rolling stock rail, and from the pre-Metro Matters projects contained in the IRP program management program to priority needs that we've identified: passenger facilities, maintenance facilities, track and structure, urgent capital needs, and systems. And on subsequent slides, I'll provide some details on what each of those means. So first of all, projects with available funds. And these are available funds. Again, we're on an expenditure-based budget, so these are available funds within the current fiscal year. there's $13.1 million in expenditures for bus purchases that we will not make this year. We will make those expenditures after July 1. So in the current fiscal year, those funds are available. Those funds have been programmed in the 11 through 16 capital program. So the funds are again available in the current fiscal year, and we plan for them in the subsequent fiscal year. The next one, the rolling stock rail, $3.2 million. There's a small balance in the 2000-3000 series railcar rehabilitation program that is surplus. The other is in the 7000 series railcar procurement. We had budgeted about $4 million. I believe it's $2.5 million. It's not needed. We plan to make expenditures that we will not make. Finally, it's the program management category, specifically the pre-Metro Matters projects. Again, the pre-Metro Matters projects are projects that were incorporated into the Metro Matters program at the beginning of the Metro Matters program. We had about a $20 million budget, and we had a large carry forward, and we do not anticipate to make the level of expenditures that is currently in the budget, the adopted budget plus the carry forward. So there are surplus funds in the current fiscal year of about $13 million. Yes, sir.
Yeah, these funds are 5 years plus old.
They are.
How would we take this $13.1 million from the pre-Metro Matters capital fund? How much money will be left in that particular category?
It's approximately $20 million.
There's still another $7 million that is over 5 years old that we have not either obligated or spent.
Mainly it's expended, yes.
They're
mainly funds that have not been expended but are budgeted and assigned to projects.
So the answer, just tell me.
The distinction I think I'm hearing is assigned or obligated, which may not be the same. Is there a distinction?
I think I have the details on the balances. I don't believe I have the details of those funds, which are... I have the outstanding balance by project that I can provide to the board, but I do not have the amounts that are obligated.
Can I just have a follow-up?
Yes.
Just speak to me, pardon me.
Sure.
Are you saying that this $13.1 million in funding, which is over 5 years old, it obviously hasn't been spent, are you saying to me nor has it been obligated?
There are... I believe the majority of this has been obligated. Yes, and I'm getting a nod. Yes, it's been obligated. It's just
The reprogramming is moving this away from a previously obligated purpose to a new purpose.
This is again a cash flow issue. The funds are not needed in the current fiscal year. They will be needed in fiscal years 11, 12, and 13.
Once we use the $13.1 million, how much then is left from the pre-Metro Matters capital amount?
The current balance is $36 million.
So we have $36 million in capital funding going back more than 5 years that we have not spent, but you think most of which we have obligated.
I do.
And can you get, Madam Chair, may I request
breakdown
on the obligations that have been
made? We'll provide.
There's a request for some information, and you'll provide it for our next meeting?
Or in advance of that.
Okay. Yes, in advance. Thank you.
Madam Chair, clarification. What I thought I heard was that, for instance, the hybrid electric buses will not arrive this year, but they will arrive next year.
That's correct.
And so what we're basically doing is taking the money from this year and moving it to next year.
That's correct.
Okay. And substituting something else this year.
Right, and the substitution's in the next slide.
But we will get our buses anyway.
We will get our buses.
Soon.
We will.
Okay.
And then on the next slide, these are what we've identified as the priority needs. They're listed here by category. The passenger facilities, a failure of a beam at the Huntington parking garage, rehabilitation work on various garages and parking structures, maintenance facilities, 1.9 for the construction of the bus operations control center at the Carmen Turner facility, track and structure work that has progressed more quickly than was anticipated in the budget. This includes some emergency work at Farragut North, as well as what I mentioned before, the acceleration of track and structures work that directly impacts the safety of our system. Category of urgent capital needs, mainly the
design and construction of the Chevrolet abutment and track repair. And finally, systems. This is the bus and radio systems for the replacement of those communication systems.
Mr. McKay and then Mr. Giancola.
Yeah, on the second from last one, $12.5 million, to design and construct a Chevrolet abutment and track repair. Wasn't that the one where we had the developer had something happen on his property and it damaged our track? And if so, are we trying to recoup that money? Or where are we? What's the status of that particular effort?
So we're in the process.
So potentially part of that could be reimbursed. Okay.
Mr. Downey?
The funds that are shown here, are these the expenditures that will occur in this fiscal year with respect to these projects?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Graham? Why is it that we're able to divert $13.1 million from bus purchases? I mean, this has been something that has been on track for, has been, you know, going on for some time. But why do we reach this point in time and all of a sudden be able to find this $13.1 million?
I think Mr. Rizwa can answer that question.
Well, the question is that of this $29.4 million reprogramming, we're able to divert $13.1 million from bus replacement. And I'm just wondering, why is this money available to us? Why isn't this something that's active, we're actively engaged in using?
The buses for 2010 come in two components. One is the stimulus buses were ordered in June of last year. Those buses are in the process of arriving. We have about 15 on the property. All will be here by the end of May. The 100 buses for FY10 on the original replacement schedule were ordered in July. They go online after the 48 buses, and they will all be here in September. So there's no delay in the delivery of the vehicles. There's, the payment for the buses obviously does not take place until they've arrived. So we anticipate that all the buses will come in on time by September. And I would assume all the payments will be made before the end of the calendar year.
So it's just a matter of just a couple of months into our FY11.
Right. It's not a delay in the bus procurement itself.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then finally, the next section is on the proposed budget amendments. And again, this is what we spoke about previously, $59,000 from a transit security grant to enhance the Montgomery Garage, and finally the 5,000 series railcar program to receive an insurance settlement of $450,000, and so that would increase the capital program by $512,000.
So that increases funding that came to us through two different sources.
Correct. And the grant, and then also an insurance settlement. And then the final slide is the board request to approve the reprogramming, to propose the programming, and also amend the capital budget we announced that we described.
Are there any questions? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Mr. Downey moves approval.
Second.
And a second by Mr. McKay that we do the reprogramming and amend the budget appropriately for the Metro Matters and for the capital project. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Ms.
May I support everything that you're doing.
Okay.
But may I have an important clarification question answered on the capital budget issue?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have recently found out as a board that the federal monies, which quite frankly I had assumed the so-called dedicated, I don't object too strongly, the so-called dedicated federal dollars would come to us as payment. I don't know how everybody else was thinking, but I thought it was. Now it's coming to us as a grant, and it's not going to be available until after July 1, and probably in the first quarter of the Metro fiscal year. Things get a little confusing here when you deal with the various fiscal years, as we all know. The question on my mind is, on behalf of the District of Columbia, is ready, willing, and able to make a payment of $50 million of additional capital funding pursuant to this dedicated funding agreement between the three jurisdictions and Congress. Is it now apparent to you or not apparent to you that our member jurisdictions will only have to make the one quarter payment in terms of the DC fiscal year, and that will be all that will be expected from us in the FY, in our FY 10, your first quarter of FY 11? I think you understand the question, because
yes,
we went over this at considerable length at my oversight hearing. And so...
That's correct. So we will bill...
And the way in which I focus this question is as follows. On October the 1st, will you bill the District of Columbia and the rest of the jurisdictions for one quarter of capital funding under the dedicated funding, or will you bill for one quarter for FY, our FY 11, and a remaining quarter from FY 10? So that there would be two payments obligated at that point. Which is it to be?
Well, usually we don't.
You answer the question any way you want, but you know
I'm
what
thinking
the question
about
is.
It. I understand the question.
Okay.
We, on July 1st, we bill quarterly to the jurisdictions. On July 1st, which is the beginning of Metro's fiscal year, which is the beginning of the district's, beginning of their last quarter, right? We will bill $12 million. Which is
12.5.
Quarter of the 12.5. That's correct. Thank you. Of the $50 million. That's how we will bill it. And then in October 1st of your new fiscal year, to the end of our fiscal year, we will bill the balance.
It's in line with how we billed for
the balance of the funds that we promised in FY 10.
That's correct.
So in other words, we will have...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me just, before I make the statement, is it 12?
Is it closing out?
I'm sorry?
Is it not closing out?
Well, because the fiscal years are different, it's just a little complicated. But I'm going to have Matt answer because he just corrected me. We are going to be billing every quarter $12 million, $12 million, $12 million, and $12
million. So that, in effect, frees up. In the case of the District of Columbia and other jurisdictions, it frees up some $37.5 million in our fiscal year 10, which we were ready, willing, and able to pay, but when we're now no longer obligated to pay for the reason that the federal government is only going to pay one quarter of its commitment during that period.
The way we prepared the FY 11 budget is that we've included $150 million both in anticipated federal payments and anticipated match from the jurisdictions. And without further instructions from the board, we would bill in accordance with how we bill for the match to the other grants. So quarterly payments, 12 and a half, beginning July 1, 12 and a half, September, and carrying forward.
So the District of Columbia hopefully will have $50 million in our FY 11 to contribute to this. And so we will be able to make the $12.5 million payments throughout our FY 11, throughout your FY 11. And so there are capital dollars in our FY 10 that will no longer be needed for this purpose. Unless we wish to simply carry over, but we have so many other capital needs, and perhaps other jurisdictions understand the capital needs. I don't know if other jurisdictions would like to speak to that issue. But we have great capital needs that, you know, such as what you've done here, you've deferred, you've taken $13.1 million that you didn't need to spend in this fiscal year and used it for pressing needs. We have pressing needs that we need to use these capital dollars for. I think the parallels are unmistakable.
Well, I think I understand your concern, Mr. Graham. I think from a process piece, it does appear that you may be affected differently than the rest of us in the jurisdiction. But, I think what you're saying is that you have the 12.5 from your 10 that you had held.
Right.
And
50,
yes.
You haven't allocated
50. Well, we've allocated that. But it's equally, you're saying when we will actually make the payment. And that's the only differences that are there. The question is.
Well, but Virginia, the state of the Commonwealth of Virginia is obligated.
Sure, that's exactly right.
The state of Maryland is obligated. Well, I don't know if you might want to speak to this how much.
Everything is.
But
yes. Go ahead. Mr. Downey? This is just
$150 million federal money was appropriated in federal fiscal year 10.
That's correct. In January.
And another one has been requested and I expect will be appropriated in fiscal 11.
That's correct.
That will open the opportunity for Metro to come in with a package of projects and set up federal accounts to draw those. The match for which is either provided by Metro or provided by the jurisdiction. I think it would be helpful if we could have a schedule, fiscal year by fiscal year, what will be the flow of project approvals, and also what will be the actual flow of project expenditures, which is going to be substantially beyond that, and then match it up with the jurisdictions. But I think there may be some room for creative cash management here.
Thank you, Sam. Mr. Bidger?
Yeah, I think I was going to just follow on what Mr. Downey said. The billings that we expect to receive, first of all, I don't think the $150 million matched to the federal dedicated funding should be treated any differently from any other part of our program. It becomes part of the resource that makes the whole program work. But then the billings that we should get by quarter should reflect the expected expenditures for that quarter. So if, in fact, your expected expenditures are greater than $12 million for that portion, you might bill more, and if they're expected to be lower, you might bill less, but it should be whatever you think you're going to actually expend.
And that's a very good point. As you know, currently we do not do that. It's just the Metro Matters funding agreement was divided by four and send it over. But I agree. If we had a very much better way at cash management at Metro, and this goes back to the systems that I have been talking about, we can do what you're suggesting, and I'm hoping that we can still do that, and I would agree with that, because it is best practices and better cash management, especially in the environment that we're in, where we're all very constricted on that basis.
And so Mr. Downey's request essentially matches what Mr. Graham was saying is, let us know when you need it, and then we'll give it to you.
Madam Chair, what I conclude from this conversation is that the District of Columbia, and I've got to deal with this because I've got the budget before my committee of the council right now, and I have got to be sure I'm very clear about this in terms of how we're acting. And what I conclude is that the District of Columbia, and I'm just speaking for D.C. at the moment, it has got to have $12.5 million for you, for Metro, every quarter into FY11, because there's no federal appropriation of $150 million yet for the next year. And so we have to have that available to us. And if we have that available to us, then we have satisfied our obligation under this law. Am I right or am I wrong? Ms. O'Keefe, I hope you're following. So I think but I think it would be helpful for everybody to have a writing on this, because this is a very, very important question for jurisdictional budgeting.
I think you're right, and I think the clarity that Mr. Downey has recommended is one way of doing it, but I think the point is that we have to be prepared, given it is clearly described as a grant application versus an expenditure at the beginning of it. And that's what our make clear so that each of us are not.
Right. And it also should be said that if any single jurisdiction does not make the match, then that of course affects the overall amount. And so, that's all of this is interrelated and very important. I just want to say in conclusion that I must say I'm disappointed, frankly, that there was not $150 million payment made by the federal government to Metro WMATA, because This is really what I thought was going to happen. DC was ready to make this $50 million payment. Others can speak for themselves. But this grant concept, which I guess is somehow required by the federal bureaucracy, puts us behind in terms of the capital advances that we were really hoping to make. And I just don't want to lose that in this discussion, because we had high hopes for $300 million becoming available. And now in our FY10, we don't have anything available. And our FY11, we have only whatever the grant approval is. And so, you know, this is less than what I thought we were going to be having.
And I think we will get to where we expected. I take Mr. Downey's comment that the appropriation is not that we will not receive it. It's actually the process by which we will receive it and the timing in which we will receive it. Mr. Downey.
In our question, Ms. Kissel, in our previous conversation about federal grants and capital, you did make the point that Metro is seeking to draw down fully in the fiscal year the amount of the federal grants. Yes. And there's no reason why that could not also apply to this particular program, but we need to plan for it.
Yes, sure. Yes, that's correct. That's the intent.
Okay.
We're done with that presentation?
Yes, we had. We're ready to move to.
Okay, so we move to the next presentation, which is the budget continuation of the budget discussion.
And this, let me just say that I think this is a very important part that we have to do in order to get to building or. Disposing of the general manager's budget, and this is just the beginning step of it. And one of the things that I hope that we will be able to do today is begin with looking at the operating budget and whatever discussions that we have in terms of what we'd like to set aside to say are the considerations that we'd like to move to. And there will be other pieces of this, as was advertised in the document, that will be part of the future discussions as well, so that we will get to a point in which we hopefully, and I'll talk about the next steps and as we get to the end as to when we can actually move for an adoption of the budget.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This part of the presentation is actually similar to what we've done in prior years. It is really focuses primarily on the expense of the authority, so that the committee can have the ability to have an understanding of where our expenses are increasing, where there might be some constraints, where there might be some issues, and how we actually assume for the planning of our proposed budget. And it's an opportunity for the committee members to ask us questions. We can provide some follow-up detail if it's not here in this presentation. But you're right, Ms. Hudgens, that this is really just primarily expense. When we come back on the 22nd, we will have more discussions on fares, revenues, and then as well as other recommendations that the general manager is poised to recommend. So let's just take you through this particular presentation. We can actually go to the next page. I actually want to start by saying that this is actually my second budget year, and I've taken a look at the past, and I have seen that over time we have actually reduced on a regular basis in terms of, you know, where we can constrain our expenses, where we can actually take expense out if we're not actually planning to use it. So just on the bottom of the chart, I give you a picture of the RIFs, which is the layoffs that we've taken over time, as well as some of the vacancies that we've eliminated as we review some of our positions and scope of work that we provide. So as you can see, the totals over the last 4 years, and we're recommending positions that are be decreased in 2011 of almost 660 positions. We have taken some layoffs this year, as you know, and we will continue to do that before the end of the year terminates, so that we can actually be prepared for next year. We actually are recommending 88 positions that will be in our baseline starting at FY 2011. So we will be down by 88 positions. That is just on administrative positions. I'm not speaking here about any of the rail and bus reductions that we can talk about later. But as you can see on the above chart, and I kind of started at the bottom, we've actually done a good job in the past of constraining our travel, constraining our consultants, reducing those costs year over year, and I can show you that throughout the presentation. On the next chart, this just gives you the crosswalk of where we are. In FY10, we have a $784 million revenue with a $1.3 million billion expense, and then the subsidy of $547. So what has affected that in order to get down to the bottom, which is the general manager's proposed budget that you have for January? We actually have, because of the economy, some reduced ridership. So as I have mentioned before, the aggressive ridership that we have this year, we are not seeing. We did not see for the first half of the year. So our ridership growth is at really 2009 levels plus 2%, which we feel is going to be appropriate going into FY 2011 budget. Part of that $21 million is also the fact that we are, how we defer revenue. Currently we defer, or we actually take 5% of our deferred revenue as unused fare media, and that's how we recognize that revenue. In the past years, we would have a balance of $80 million. As I'm looking at that balance now, it's actually being depleted, and for good reasons, because people are actually using their Smart Trip cards and not having those unused balances on them. So as a result of some recommended methodology from my controller, as well as our outside auditors, we're recommending instead of a 5% deferred amount on revenue, we would recommend a 3% to recognize unused fare media. And that makes up about $10 million of this 21.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just want to make sure I understand. One of the things that we are discovering now is that because more people use Smart Trip cards, more of the media, in fact, are used faster. Is that what we're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And that means that the amount that we have to hold, because we know that people will sooner or later want that, also changes. Mm-hmm. Is that amount going up or down?
That amount is going down.
You're saying that we don't think there's as much out there by the end of the year as there has been in the past.
That's
because
correct.
People are not taking fare cards with a nickel on them and sticking them in their dresser drawer.
That's correct.
Never,
and one of the reasons we see that in our cash forecast, so we actually have we're looking at documents that allow us to understand what that is. And as a result, we're recommending deferring using a lower method, lower percentage to recognize the unused fare media because of that.
So when you say you're going down to 3%, you're saying the draw from the deferred revenue is going to be smaller.
Yes, the way we look at when we take cash in, we automatically put it into a deferred revenue account.
Great.
And then as we recognize ridership numbers, then we actually recognize revenue officially on our accounts.
But if the situation is as you described it just now, that in fact our total deferred revenue can be lower because people are using their cash faster,
mm-hmm.
then we ought to be able to increase it, not decrease it.
Well, you're right, it could be lower, but I guess I'm looking at our cash balances. We're looking at the recommendation that we received from our controller, and she's recommending that the 5% actually is too high. We can actually have an assessment, and we are in the process of having that assessment done by some outside auditors. But
well, my concern here is you're costing us $10 million, basically, mm-hmm. right, by doing this? That's $10 million worth of service or $10 million worth of fares?
Well, I don't know if I'm costing $10 million.
Well,
I'm doing the prudent financial thing is the way I would look at that.
There's a budget adjustment in order to deal with this reserve that basically causes a $10 million decrease in revenues,
mm-hmm.
which means we have to make it up with subsidies, fares, or service adjustments. That's a pretty significant $10 million, especially when you add it to a million here and a million there, which do, in fact, over time add up.
Mm-hmm.
I really think this is worth looking at, because if what you're mm-hmm. saying initially is correct, that we don't need as large a reserve, then we shouldn't be changing this. If anything, we should be drawing down on the reserve sum and solving some of our problems.
Well, the reserve is actually already lower. I mean, it was at $80 million.
Okay, it's what
probably,
is it now?
It's probably down to a $20 million level, but I don't know. But I
how
can certainly come back,
that?
And we can have we can have you give you more information on how the impact that is
on
cash.
I suggest that this is one of the areas that our general manager can take a look at and say, you know, given all the problems that we've got, is this an action that we want to take today? And, you know, maybe there's some room there for not raising fares quite as much or cutting service quite as much.
We'll definitely bring it back. I pointed out because that's a methodology change, which definitely impacts how we treat revenue. So.
I appreciate it. That was very good. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin, and it isn't an action it would take, but it's actually a piece that we would build in. That is to make the shift as to whether or not we utilize it in another way rather than.
I'm just suggesting that that's an analysis that maybe we want to revisit because it has a rather substantial impact.
Well, I would just tell you that we will give you the benefits and the issues. The obvious issues are that we're going to have a cash issue. And how you would like to deal with that is certainly something that we will lay out for the board. And then you could consider how you'd like to treat it.
You certainly need to have enough deferred revenue to cover rides actually taken in the year in the budget year. And if there isn't enough deferred revenue for that, you got a problem.
That's correct. So we'll bring that.
The question is, what's that number?
Yeah. The other things that we advertising revenue loss, which we've spoken about numerous times, in terms of our new contracts, which actually is going to be delivering us less revenue than we have had in the past. We no longer are going to be getting the safe, clean, reliable. They're TIF funds actually from 5 years ago. We will no longer be receiving that. And as a result, that puts a hole in our revenue budget as well. Some of the other.
Do we have a status report on our advertising contract negotiations?
Where we are?
Because this is a huge part of our problem.
I don't see our media relations director, Mark Capasano. We can get him.
Can we have?
If you could bring him down, we can get someone down here to address that specific question.
I just
question.
Would like an update as to where we are.
I do know generally we're looking to award it before the end of the year.
Yeah.
I just don't know where we are specifically. So.
We can provide it, yeah.
Okay. Other impacts to revenue. You see other revenue, which is the labor and COLAs, which is $35 million. This is actually made up of a couple of things, made up of primarily step increases, which we are contractually committed to. Provide for our hourly workers, and then also what we have in here is the 3% increase to our union 689. We've assumed that in the budget currently, so that's something that the board should be aware of, that we've actually reserved for that in the FY11 budget. Fringes. As you know, and I'll go into detail about this a little bit later, in detail about fringes. I know some board members had questions on it. I think, Mayor, you will do.
Mr.
Thank you. Question on the COLAs. Of course, we have a unionized workforce, and we also have a non-unionized workforce.
That's correct.
Are the non-unionized workforce getting COLAs?
And I'll show this in the subsequent slide, but the non-unionized workers currently in the budget, we have assumed a 1.5% or 1%, thank you, increase in salary, and that's something else that the committee should
consider. What is that valued at?
It's probably about $1.2 million.
All right, thank you.
And I'll get into some of that detail later on, with the assumptions that we made. Fringes, I'll talk about that a little bit later. The ADA, obviously that's a direct outcome of the growth that we're seeing, and as a result, our expenses increasing by that amount. Casualty and liability, again, is premiums, insurance on property and liability, as well as a third-party increases in that. So then we get down to a baseline, which is the 722 in revenue and then the 1.4 in expenses. You're familiar with the second part of this chart, which is really in the general manager's budget that you have in January, the $89 million in fare increases that we recommended, some of the bus and service reductions that we recommended, and then the ADA demand growth, the $16 million in departmental reductions, which again I'll get into detail, and then we have an additional contribution which we have not labeled. So that's what, just to give you the framework for the budget discussion. On the next chart, here we've attempted to put our expenses in place for you. At the top of the chart are the are the personnel expenses, and at the bottom of the chart are the non-personnel expenses. We've done it by year. So you can see 2008, 2009 are actuals, and then you can see our approved budget, which we are in this year. We actually developed the baseline budget, and then we have the proposed budget. The difference between the baseline budget and the proposed budget is the gap closing methods that I just talked about. And that includes the bus and service reductions as well as the fare increases. And then you see the specific changes. And in subsequent charts, I'm going to get into detail on each categories of this, but I wanted you to see the trend of expenses and how they've been growing year over year. Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to pick up on Mr. Giantrola's earlier comment. So what we're looking at on the salaries line of $2 million, most of that is a pay increase. Is that right?
On the salary line of you're talking about $197
million?
The very
first line, the $2 million change between 10 and 11.
That's correct.
Is a salary increase?
Well, there's a lot of puts and takes on that, actually, on the salaries. But
well, at least 1.2 of it is?
I'm sorry?
At least 1.2 is a salary increase?
That's correct, yes.
I find this difficult, you know, because what happens is, as much as I firmly believe, and as a former employee here, I always liked the idea of salary increases, I find it hard to go back to the Secretary of Transportation in Maryland, who has just done temporary salary reductions for all of the employees there, put them on furloughs, which put, you know, then again reduces their salaries, has cut all COLAs, is not doing any step increases, and say, well, you ought to do more furloughs and reduce people's salaries even further so that we can increase them at Metro. And isn't that what you're asking us to say to her?
Well, and I agree. I'm not commenting on that. I think that's I'm presenting the assumptions that we made in the budget.
Yeah. So let me just add to that. And that is, this is the previous budget, the assumptions. And looking at an item such as this, we also are looking at other items that I feel are necessary to be expended in the operating budget. We don't have the final numbers on it. And items such as this may have to be used to offset those types of things. In other words, you may not do that $1.2 million increase because we've got to spend it someplace else, probably having to do with safety.
I can understand that, and that would be a reasonable set of things for you to bring to us and say, here are 10 areas where I think I can save it, and I need to spend them over here because it's a critical expenditure. I'd feel a lot better going to the Secretary of Transportation saying they're not increasing their salaries, but there are some expenditures on safety that absolutely have to be made. Mm-hmm. I would find it hard to vote for a budget that included those salary increases and have to argue that back in the state of Maryland.
Yes, and I agree, and thank you. I mean, I was just trying to frame up the assumptions and how we built the budget, and I would certainly have gotten into those discussions, but thank you for bringing it up.
Well, then I have the question on the next line.
May I just comment? Because I think, and I'm going to talk process piece, because I think it's very important that, at least speaking from my point and maybe Virginia's, I don't see this as our budget as we will be taking forward unless we accept all of the assumptions that the general manager made.
That's exactly right.
And
that's
so
why
your
we're
point,
asking these questions.
That's right. So okay. Your point is really a very important point. But I think what I wanted to put the clarification on is that your point should be the position that you have until we adopt a budget as to where you think we're going.
Right.
Because I wouldn't want anyone to walk out of here and say that this represents Metro adopting a 1% increase for its non-union employees mm-hmm. when we have not moved to adopt a budget yet. This is a very detailed walkthrough, and one of the purposes is to do exactly what you just did.
Yes, and I appreciate the opportunity to do exactly that.
That's exactly
I've been waiting for a while to get this in front of us so we could start to do that, because I think part of our fiduciary responsibility before we act on things like fares is to see what in fact we really do need as expenditures. And as Mr. Sorrell says, you know, if there are some additional expenditures that aren't here, those are things we ought to consider as well. But we also ought to consider what the reductions might be, because each one of those represents, as I said before, service that we might not have to reduce or fares that we may not have to raise. On the second line item, wages, as I remember, this number changed between December and January when we did exactly what you said, Ms. Kissel. We said, well, we really need to put in there the 3% potential, given that this is a court case now, the potential for a 3% increase for the unions. And as I remember at that time, each percent was worth $5 million. So we went out, put in $15 million, which raised our shortfall from $175 million to $190 million, right? That's why we went from $175 to $190, was that 3% got put in there, the $15 million got put in. But I only see a 5% increase, or $5 million increase here, which looks like 1%.
This also reflects the proposed service reductions.
The service reductions, yeah. So the service reductions, bus and service reductions, are about $35-36 million in the proposed budget book. That relates to a lot of people that would be reflected here in that number.
Okay, so what if you broke this apart, how much of the, you're saying there's $10 million worth of service reductions, or is there something else there?
No, the bus and service reductions are about 36 million,
and the salary component is about 19 million. The wage component.
The wage component. Right.
Okay. The reduction due to, and 19 million is the wage reduction due to the service.
That's correct. The service reductions that we have in the general manager's budget, mm-hmm, total about 36 million, of which 19 million are labor related or mm-hmm wages.
Our wages, or our wages and fringes?
19 million, do you include fringes in that?
So that's two different lines here.
I understand. We'll get an answer to it. We'll get back to you.
Okay.
I don't
that's,
know
that's
that
that's
exact
fair
answer, but if you'd like to know, so the question, let me be clear, you would like to know, of the proposed bus and rail reductions that we have in the budget book, you would like to know the labor component of that, as well as the fringes that are associated with.
Actually, what I'd like
correct
to see, that's one piece of it, but what I really wanted to see was, where were these numbers in December? Then all of a sudden, $15 million got added in, you know, because our total deficit, our total loss was $15 million higher because of this one item. And at that time, the service decreases were there. So how does this stuff crosswalk between December and January when the $15 million got added in? And you're saying, well, no, it really was five because it was a bunch of other reductions. Those reductions were there to begin with, I thought.
We have actually, I know you've had this question in the past, and we have actually been working with the board secretary to sit down with you. We have a crosswalk, but, I mean, we're happy to provide that. We can do that today.
Yeah, I'd love to see that
and
crosswalk.
And we can do that to the rest of the board as well.
I suspect everybody's going to want to see, how did you get from where you were to here, given that, as I remember it, the whole increase from 175 to 190 was that one issue.
We can
and
provide
then
that detail.
All of a sudden, some of it seems to have disappeared. The other question that I have in this line item is the one that I've asked you several times. And I'm sure you want to sit offline and discuss that with me also. But
okay,
when we did our 2009 budget, mm-hmm, we had a 3% assumed increase, all of which was accrued,
mm-hmm,
which means there was $15 million in there. In 2009, we paid the union
A lump sum
of 2% of that.
That's correct.
So the $5 million is left, and I presume it got spent on something else. But the base was still there. So as we went into 2010 and we had an increase, that base increase of 15% was there, and it's in today's budget. And we assumed beyond that another 1.5%. No?
Each year when we prepare the budget, we don't use the previous year's budget as the base. We actually take a dump from PeopleSoft, we look at the actual employees, the actual hours, and we apply the assumptions to the actual people from PeopleSoft. And mm-hmm. so our methodology is not that we build subsequent year's budget on the previous years. It's actually based on the people who are currently employed, the vacancies, and that's something, again, that we can provide to you. We have a pretty detailed walkthrough.
But it depends on what you put in PeopleSoft. If you put the base number in there with the original 15%, you're going to generate 15% too much coming out of PeopleSoft.
We use the actual salaries in PeopleSoft, make assumptions about vacancies, and then apply assumptions to those actual people and the salaries.
The actual salaries with or without the accrued amounts. Because from a bookkeeping point of view, you gave them that money because you had to accrue it.
And so that would have been applied after. Applied afterwards. So we can walk into that.
Mr. Benjamin, I think your questions are very good questions, and I think process-wise it would be helpful if you would pose them as questions, ask for them back in writing, and then if we need to review them as a committee, we review them, because I think they do become building blocks for answering questions or determining where we go if we have those still as questions.
Okay, so the issue that I have is, in my simplistic way of looking at budgets, the process would include that base, which would have carried into 2009, and then, I'm sorry, from 2009 to 2010, and then it would have been the base again for 2011. So that would have argued that at least part, if not all, of that money was in a base, given that you know, I don't know how you did your PeopleSoft and what your assumptions were on salaries. So what I would like to know is what, in fact, were the increases that were assumed in each one of these stages for the union for a matter which is still in the courts? And to what degree are we at the point where there may, in fact, be an over-assumption of what the pay would need to be?
We can provide that.
So we can see those various pieces, which assumption got used at which point, because that's going to drive this entire process, and there could be easily $15 or $20 million sitting there, depending upon what assumptions were made.
And that, Ms. Carroll, will be provided to the board, and I guess any discussion you need to have in detail to that will be provided with Mr. Benjamin.
We'll provide
the response will be
to the
board,
and we'll be happy to sit down with anyone. Mr. Benjamin, I know you would want to have that. If we can do that today or whenever your schedule permits, we'll be happy to do that with anyone as well, take them through that analysis, which we have.
Okay. And this is detailed, and it is important, but we do need to keep it.
I know. So let me skip to the next page, because I have more detail on this. This chart just shows you, it's a basic chart that just shows the expenses by mode.
Yes.
And it's just apparent that rail takes up a lot of expense, but obviously our cost recovery on rail is the highest. And the cost recovery on... Let's go to the next chart. This shows the personnel expenses. Without addressing Mr. Benjamin's question specifically, I will just make a couple of points on this. The assumptions, as we already talked about, for the proposed budget in for salaries includes the 3% wages and salaries. Includes a 3% on the COLA as well as the step increases. It includes the 1% for the non-rep, so that's the assumption there. And that's baked into those numbers that you see there. The other point I would like to make is on the, we went back to 2008 because we thought it would be important for the board to look at this, although they probably are familiar with it already. But we see 2008 to 2009, a very large jump in salaries. I'll take that for an example. And then we also see that in wages. That's actually a component of two things. One, in that point, there was a 5% increase in non-rep pay that was done in 2008, which actually contributed to that number. And the second piece was there was a large restructuring, as you recall, on the bus reorganization. So there was probably a host of 100 or so positions that were added in the bus restructuring that Mr. Cato had done. And that was the reason why you see the jump in salaries and wages in those 2 years. And I just want to make that point. You're probably familiar with it. The other additional change that we made, that the board had made, was the additional 25 police officers during that year as well. So that was the change. And that has carried through, actually, year to year, as you can see, under the salaries and then on wages. Healthcare. The healthcare costs have gone up, as you can see. Go to the prior. The healthcare costs have gone up. As you can see, healthcare, the $13 million. It's due to a couple things. One is actually the increase, probably 6 or 7% is the increase that we currently see in the industry. So we're right in line with that. The other costs that we see are, we have actually a large increase, but because we in this line item is post-retirement benefits, we actually, that's probably about 38 or 40 million of that $145 million number. So we're carrying a lot of those post-retirement benefits, and over time that has increased 10 to 12 to 13% year over year. So as we as our labor force is attriting and retiring, actually those costs are being carried through as operating costs. I wanted to make that point as well. The pension costs, I think Mayor Yule had a specific question on this, and I'm sorry he's not here. But as you know, we have had market losses in the pension. However, those losses are going to be, and we've advertised those losses, so we've smoothed over the liability over a 10-year period with the help of our labor and trusts and management, the trust that actually manage those agreements. However, we will be living with those liability losses time and time until we finally recover from that. So I think one of his questions was, why are we still contributing so much? It's because our pension funds would be unfunded if we did not. So, yes.
In this area, the key to the distribution is the mark-to-market and the timing for the mark-to-market. If that timing was done last December or earlier, you're going to get a very different result from if you do it today or tomorrow. Have you adjusted that?
We have actuarial results that actually validate the number that we have in our budget. And we actually have refreshed actuarial information on our pensions in 2 weeks, I believe. So actually, maybe before the April 22nd meeting, I'll have a fresh update for you on that.
That would be very helpful, because I don't think many people could have predicted what the effects of the recession were when it went down, and I don't think very many of them can predict very well how it's going back up. And doing a current mark-to-market might, in fact, change that number substantially. So if you could
take a look
at that.
I don't think it will, but we'll be happy to bring the actuarial reports to the board if you can take a look at that. On the next chart, it's just the pie chart, and I'll skip it because I know we're sort of need to move this along. If you go to the next chart, we talk about the non-personnel expenses. The largest is in the ADA contract. It's attributed to the demand and growth. And as a result of that, our MV contract, which provides a service, is increased. We also are looking at other services. And as you can see, we're...
Let me I guess to expand on that, the demand is there because ridership is what is the performance measure for the contract.
Yes.
And so therefore we see.
Right. You're absolutely right. The MV contract is a performance contract. And actually, I know Mr. Kent is working on that to try to see if we can mitigate, as well as some of the recommendations that he's made in the reducing it. Actually, in this number, the $96 million number, it includes the $10 million reduction that is in the general manager's budget. So it would have been more if Mr. Kent has not been taking some of those changes that are currently out there on the public docket.
Right.
Services are remaining relatively, other services are remaining relatively flat. Materials and supplies, again, we're reducing that. The largest contributor to this is our ability now to look at how we capitalize appropriate parts. So our controller has a protocol where if it's extending the life cycle, it meets standards, accounting standards, and it's actually over a certain dollar limit, she has actually put that process in place. So we were able to actually take some reductions there in our operating budget because of that. Fuel and power is a great story. We've had great success in our propulsion hedge contracts, as well as in our diesel contracts as well. And as a result, we see a savings here. I will make the point, and later on you'll be hearing from Chief Taborn about the safety recommendations from the TOC and the NTSB. most of those safety recommendations programs are going to cost. And he will show you a number later on today what the cost of that is. That is currently not in the budget. What I am attempting to do is trying to mitigate those costs, and hopefully by the 22nd I will have a plan for you so as not to actually add to the service reductions or some of the decisions on fares that you need to make. One of the ways I will do this is to look at the propulsion hedge contracts that we have in place. That's really the only lever that I have. So I will come back to you on that. Casualty and liability speaks for itself because of our insurance issues that we've had. I'll just head past the next two charts and go to the purchase services chart, which is always of interest to the committee. This is services, and I've kind of split it out in terms of percentages as where we actually make those expenditures. Contract maintenance are things like escalators, elevators, snow removal, our maintenance contracts, our hardware and software maintenance contracts for our systems. That has increased, but as we actually renew our information technology systems, actually those costs go up, and we go off warranty on some of those systems. That's where you see the increase. Professional technical are things like auditors, actuarials, DuPont contracts, where actually they're managing our safety, work safety program. Those are some of the contracts. Our general counsel has on-call attorneys that we use for things. So that's where you find some of those types of expenses. Management parking fee is strictly that. It's the LAS contract that we have in place that manages the parking structures around each of the, that actually staffs the parking structures in each of our stations. Temporary services and transaction fees. Transaction fees are going up quite a bit. That's a basic outcome of the fact that more people are using Smart Trip cards, which again is a great story, although it has implications, as the one we just spoke about in terms of the unused fare media. The other implication it has is that it costs more in terms of the debit credit card fees as people are loading, you know, from a credit card or a debit credit card. We actually have to pay a transaction cost on that. We are looking to renegotiate the contract, probably not in time for 11, but we might be able to actually have some savings in the later part of 11, certainly in 12. As those volumes of transactions increase, we can lower the cost.
Okay.
You mentioned in the contract maintenance the elevator and escalator repair contracts. At the Virginia public hearing, I don't know if this happened at others, there were suggestions made that there may be savings that could be generated in that contract.
Yes.
Have you had a chance to evaluate those comments, to look at that? And if so, could you provide the board with an explanation as to, you know, how that might be achieved based on the testimony that was given?
I will do that. I heard that as well at one of the hearings that I had attended. It was a little different take on it. It was, we can actually do the escalators contract better than your in-house people. And so we'll do both, though, because I think that's actually a very good point.
It would be a good thing to evaluate and to give us some additional feedback on.
We can do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin?
Yeah, that same issue did come up in a Maryland hearing. And just for those of you that may not have been around during the various cycles of this, we have done our escalator maintenance entirely on contract. We've done our escalator maintenance entirely in-house. We have done our escalator maintenance split 50-50. We've done it by area. We've tried every combination of ways of doing it. And we have yet to find one that we really feel comfortable with or that meets the expectations of those who tell us that they can solve our problem for us. So that's kind of an interesting one to look at. And I thought now we were down to the point that we were doing very little on contract. Is this all in-house costs, or is this?
No, this is all contract costs. And you're absolutely right. We are doing very little on contract. This contract maintenance includes other items, such as mostly the hardware and software contracts that we have to put in place to maintain our system.
So this is non-elevator escalator.
That's
would it be possible to give these charts with the 2009, 2010, 2011 numbers so we can see what the growth and change was?
I think we have that in the appendix.
Is that in the appendix?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was just told we actually made a change to that, but we have hard copies we can distribute to you today on the appendix. And
just so we can see what the trends are.
You can see the trend on that, yes. So let's, on the bus and materials, I think I already explained that, but this is actually where we spend, and let me make a point of explaining this actually. This is where we spend operating dollars in bus and rail parts that are not parts to be capitalized. So it could be a nut and a bolt or lubricant and things like that. So we spend a lot of costs, if you will, under purchase services. $65 million of that is mostly for the maintenance of operations, I would call that. The next chart I will skip because I think I already talked about the propulsion and the energy, which I think is a very good story. And we'll get to this chart. This talks about the $16 million in reductions that we're taking in-house. We would be remiss if we did not continue to look at reductions in-house or look at the efficiencies, I would call them. So we have asked each of our ELT members to come forward in the general manager's budget, and they have reduced their own budgets. And you can see where they have reduced it, and the bottom is the percentages. I think as you look at that chart, I will just talk through some of the things, some of the impact of some of these reductions they're going to have. The impact on the general budget, general manager's budget is $100,000. And I don't think Mr. Sarles has any opinion on that other than it reduced some miscellaneous expenses that the prior general manager had to use for employee awards. The chief performance officer, there's some things that would be delayed in terms of consulting services that they're utilizing to do performance metrics, which I think is a very important thing to use because as we are requested to be transparent in our performance, our delivery of our program, I think we're going to be looking at doing that more in-house. So that might have an implication if we don't have the right skills, possibly. Counsel, this would reduce some of the on-call lawyers and actually the frequency that we may, actually, you can go to the, this would reduce some of the litigation matters potentially that the counsel, general counsel has. You may not be able to ask outside counsel to look at things. We may have a slower delivery in some of those items. The deputy general manager, we actually eliminated a position, and actually it's not a deputy general manager position. It was a CAO position, which is now being combined under myself. So, yes.
Can I just I see here you've got materials and supplies on the prior page.
Yeah.
For you. Mm-hmm. And I see we've got bus parts and rail parts, mm-hmm. you know. All of that is being paid with operations.
Yes, they're not eligible capitalizable expenses.
Why is that?
Because they're just not eligible under GAAP. They don't extend the life cycle of an asset, which is really the litmus test. However, we have, and you may not have been here, we have actually done that in, we've looked at capitalized parts, and we've included, we've included about $5.7 million in parts that we used to spend, we used to fund out of operating, now we're funding out of capital because our controller has deemed that they are legitimate capital expenses.
And that's appearing in the FY11?
That's appearing in FY11. That's
but did not appear in FY10?
That's correct. In FY10, we are, actually in FY10, we started out paying, in the budget, we started using operating dollars for those expenses. And towards the latter part of the year, as we have used that methodology and that protocol, we've been able to use capital funding for this.
Yeah, I don't expect you to have the answer to this right at the moment, but if you could just send us information on which bus parts are capitalizable and which are not, just so I can have a better understanding of the fine distinction here.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it's nuts and bolts and screws and lubricants,
but I think
oil changes. I mean, those things are not things that you would capitalize.
And I think it would
but
be.
But we can send it.
But you've got some millions of dollars in rail parts on
That's
page.
Correct.
On page, I don't know how many millions on page 82. I just would like to understand a little bit better.
I don't know if Dave wants to comment now, but I'm not.
You don't have to comment.
Okay.
I want to be educated.
Okay, we can put you the list on what is.
I think the point also would be to add to that what those thresholds must be in order to capitalize them, how they, what is it that extends the life of a bolt in one position versus a bolt in another position.
And it's actually, if we look at it, the acquisition of assets, and it's a protocol that we use, so we can provide that to you as well.
Thank you.
So just to keep going, operation services, there will be an impact potentially in operation services. We've actually reduced technical trainings. That's going to impact the ability to develop mechanics in the future. That's definitely an impact in a lot of different ways. It's an impact to our vacancy rate. It's an impact to our overtime rate. So it's difficult to manage if you're taking training out. We're trying to reduce that. So now we're relying on training either on the job or not really formal training, and that's going to be an impact. We're also looking at, as you know, we've modified the call center hours. Customers have implemented that already in order to sort of constrain our costs. And actually, this next year, we're looking to reduce the amount of parking attendants that we have at lots. So again, that might have an impact, but we're trying to look at everything that we can do that would make sense.
Ms. Kissel, I think it would be good to have the clarity when we talk about the removal of the personnel, the reduction of personnel, as well as clarity as to the safety issues that we had had before, as well as the...
there were
actual safety as well as cost.
We can provide that. Police Department, we're going to defer hiring of some special police. And again, we can actually have an assessment of that because that'll impact potential vandalism at bus garages, which we have been seeing. And it has been founded by our Inspector General, but that is a weakness under our FTA audit. So we're looking to defer that. I mean, we'd like to do everything, but in this environment, we're actually trying to pick things that we can live with, we can defer until FY12, or maybe defer and not actually replace. We're also looking at information technology. This is actually our response time to restoring applications. It might not be as quick as it has been in the past. We may have a delay in some of those applications. We're looking at human resources. Again, we've suspended the senior leadership program that Mr. Cato was a large proponent of. And as a result, all this does is it constrains our ability to hire the best and the brightest and actually move them through the system. So that's going to be an impact as well. We're looking at planning and joint development, limiting our consultant use. So when we have planning studies that we would like to do on behalf of the region, they will not be done. We will not have the funding to do those, so that'll be an impact. And then there'll be an impact on financial services under procurement. As I've mentioned to you before, we are looking to streamline procurement, and I'm looking to invest in technology, which we are currently doing, to streamline that. But during that process, we're going to actually have a reduction potentially in some of the reduced enforcement in procurement. And right now, the general manager and I have a discussion on that because we don't want that to affect procurement. And we're going to try to mitigate that as much as possible. And then our corporate strategy. We reduced our budget on media relations and communications, and that's definitely going to have a direct impact on how we communicate to our customers. So those are some of the painful things that we've actually had to deal with in actually constructing the FY 2011 budget. The last chart actually is really the calendar. We finally got to the end of it, but it's again just the calendar of what needs to happen. On April 22nd, we had actually expected that the board would make a decision on potential gap closing measures. I know that prior to that, the general manager will be presenting a possible solution, a recommended option, if you will, for the board to consider. And hopefully that recommended option will be discussed prior to April 22nd, so that by April 22nd, you can actually have a dialogue about that option. I know that Ms. Hudgens recommended or indicated that we possibly may have another FA committee on the 29th, but I will urge that a decision on one thing will need to be made before May 1st, and that will be on the fares. Because as you mentioned before, Mr. Benjamin, it will take us some time, at least two months to prepare the fare increases that we are currently entertaining. Some of them are very complicated, some of them are not. But I would suggest that decision come earlier than later. long meeting on that yesterday, and that will be part of the general manager's recommendation to you in the next week.
Thank you for the chart, Ms. Kissel. I'd like some feedback from the committee members. I think that this has been a very tight calendar to deal with, and our expectations of having an adopted budget on the 22nd, I think, is not likely. I think the question is how much of the information can we identify at the 22nd meeting, and to really close what we will think would be the opportunity to adopt the budget. And so the question would be the 29th or the, I don't have a calendar in front of me right now, but that we look to actually probably want to have a special meeting on the 29th so that they can be clear and adopted then. The problem being so that we have not only the time, but we don't change the budget as a result. That is, delays that we have could delay how much we could realize in savings if there are different options made. So I don't know what folks say about the 29th, but I think it is probably our best option there, since the 22nd is a board meeting and we would not be adopting the budget at that in likelihood. Mr. McKay?
Just a question. What are the consequences of adopting the budget on May 13th, which is the standing committee meeting?
Yeah, I think because, on the fare increase, we would actually require more time because of the complexities.
So there's no way to, that's the main obstacle of May 13th.
And let me make a distinction. If we get direction from the board that this is going to be the proposed fare increase that will be adopted, we can actually start to prepare those tables and schedules in our system. So I would urge that direction be given, maybe without the authority being given until later. I don't know if that can be done, but that would be my recommendation.
We have in the past done things where we say, on some elements, here are some areas where probably we're going to end up in the following area, and staff has moved ahead of a formal position in order to be prepared in those areas, and sometimes even done two different options just so they can be ready in each area. Before we do have the detailed discussion on fares, though, I do want to let you know that I have the same concern that I had the last time we had a major discussion of fares, and that is the elasticities that were used in the various different fare changes. We typically use a higher elasticity than our experience has shown. For instance, last time we had a big argument over 0.3 versus 0.2 for elasticity, and I was arguing, we're closer to 0.1 than we are to 0.3, and everybody said, no, stick with the 0.3. When we did our major fare increase, the largest we'd ever done, we actually had an increase in ridership, so we had a negative elasticity. I don't know how many other members of the board would like to look at those numbers in detail, but I would like to know what the different assumptions were in elasticity for each of the different categories of fare increases, because my tendency is to believe that we may be raising fares too much in order to get the revenue that is being assumed, because we're assuming larger losses of ridership than necessarily is likely to occur.
That's a piece of information I think would be helpful.
No, we'd be glad to provide it. In fact, we reviewed that yesterday. And my question to staff was, do we have some basis in terms of like the last fare increase, in other words, actual experience versus just theoretical? And what I've been assured, and you'll have the experience to double check that, is that we're basing it on actual experience here, not on some theory.
We do base it on actual experience, and I know that Vicki was wandering around here a few minutes ago, and we do extensive discussions of that. The issue is, have you based it on experience over the last 10 years, the last 5 years, the last 1 year? And a lot of our experience is not the break on things like peak of the peak or just peak rail, and those do tend to be different. There's Vicki. And I know she does very good analysis, but if I were doing the analysis, I'd try to be a little bit conservative.
She can comment now if you like.
Do you want to spend the time to go through all of this, or do we get copies of it?
You know,
know, I would rather have it in writing, have first and then have questions. And I think by doing that, we start to structure, because we get the information when we need it and we can make a decision on it versus without doing that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm concerned about a commitment to actually deciding the fare increase issue on the 22nd of April. I mean, I just, there's so many things that we don't know at this point that putting ourselves into that box, I feel very uncomfortable. And I recognize the time that you're going to need to make signs and so forth, and sort of the peak of the peak fare increase issues and so on. But I think you're going to have to figure out a way to do that, rather than putting the board in a box of having to make this decision with so many unknowns.
And I understand that totally. I do understand. I'd ask that May 1st. If we can't do it by May 1st, it's actually just going to cost more money to do an accelerated program, and I'm happy to do that as well, but I don't have the budget for that.
Mr. Graham.
That's the issue that I have.
Mr. Graham, the
is
question.
Is it the peak of the peak, or is it the signs?
It's not the, it's well, the signs are one thing, but it's actually programming the system, which is the more complicated thing that we need to do, and setting
well,
up.
I thought I heard you say that the peak of the peak fare increase would be, you would need to have quite a lot more effort.
Yes, that's right. That's correct.
And the decision.
Because in the past we've done this.
Mr. Graham, may
we
I
never have done this this way.
May I just help in your dilemma that you've raised? Because that's why I put the question on the 29th, and whether or not we should have a special meeting. Because if we don't do it on the 22nd, and we don't do it on the 29th, we are pushing it further in order to implement. And I think we would not like to continuously have special meetings to adopt, the sooner we make a decision in that, the better. So if the 29th is a better time to try and...
See, I think, I mean, Mr. Benjamin's questions today, which he tells me he's asked before, and I believe him that he's asked before, you know, raise about $20 million with the questions in terms of amounts of money that we wouldn't necessarily need. Now, I don't know the outcome of those questions, but I think they're good questions, and they're very relevant to determining what kind of fare increase or what kind of service reductions we're having. That's the type of thing I'm talking about. It's not an isolated thing.
And I think that's why I'm putting on an additional date rather than try and stick to the 22nd date. And the question is, should it be a board meeting, a finance committee meeting, and a board meeting, or should it... because otherwise, I don't think we can ask staff to move forward. But at some point, we have to adopt it such that it does not move forward in a manner that is not the consensus of the board. So the 29th meeting might be a special meeting in order to ensure that we can...
Of the board.
I think it's important that you've exactly said, and why the questions... And the detail here today is to make sure that we have not only seen the answers to the questions, but we have the time to address the questions and formulate what we think we're all going to consider for adoption. And that, I think, you need at least another week then. Mr. Downey has a question.
Yeah. Again, scheduling questions. You're separating, as I gather, the issue of fare setting, service cuts, and then ultimately the adoption of the budget. When does the budget actually become adopted?
Typically, the budget becomes adopted at the June meeting.
There's another set of imponderables. One is, some of the questions have been asked. The other is whether or not there will be any outside support that is currently not considered. And I'm wondering what the timing is of that. If we take action, that'll be the end of that discussion. On the other hand, we can't keep the candle in the window forever.
I think we can't.
And then one other thing. I'll be away on both the 22nd and the 29th, so if you get this done, I'd be very happy.
All the heavy lifting in one place. I think the general manager is coming back to share some guidance on this, and I think that is really something we would want to hear before we move forward. So I think we need something before the in order to adopt before the 22nd. I'm not sure sending questions and assuming discussions would be adequate unless we come back and assume that we can make some decisions. My recommendation is the 29th, that really does push the staff out quite a bit. Is there objection to that? Hearing none.
Well, recognizing that we may not be able to act, because if we don't have all the information, we're not going to do it. And so, you have to understand that part.
Well, I think the discussion on the 29th will be a very long and detailed discussion, because I think that's the hammering out of many of the questions that need to be answered. And Mr. Downey, I think it goes to the question that you have about the jurisdictional piece.
Yeah, I just want to add that I would hope that we'd be able to have a very extensive discussion on the 22nd to answer a lot of that. That doesn't mean you come to a conclusion on
that.
That's
the 22nd, exactly right.
But you really err. We provide information. Hopefully that's responsive. And that you have an extensive conversation, discussion. And then on the 29th, perhaps be in a position to make a decision.
Okay. Is that to everybody's? Okay. I hear no objection.
No, sir.
Okay. Yes, Mr.
Can I just make a very quick point here? I know everybody's anxious to move on. But the appendix information that we've just been given on materials and supplies, I just have to note that, and I'm just taking three examples here, bus tires, escalator equipment, and brake parts. We are proposing in FY11 to spend less than what we actually spent in FY09. And, I don't want to provoke any discussion on this. I just want to say, just as a matter of dollars and cents, that obviously raises a lot of questions. But, and those are just three of the things. I haven't got to body parts yet.
But those are the amount that we're capitalizing.
Well, I know, but I want to have an explanation of each one of these, just what we're doing, because it does relate to the capitalization, but it also relates to concerns that we may be unrealistically reducing our expenditures. And I want to have a full, this appendix, I don't want to have to slip by
that, yes,
without a full discussion. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. So this item, we will continue our discussion on the 29th of the operating budget. Our next item is the monthly financial report, and this monthly financial report has some very interesting pieces in it because it contains the February events and the impact of those February events. And I think we just need to quickly go through those and just to highlight what you think the impact
is. Actually, basically, the prior month we had a $33 million deficit subsidy, and now we're looking at something that's 53.8. That is directly due to the snow impact that we had, and that's really what that is. If we had not had that, we would actually have been in the direction of where we're going, where we were containing to the forecast that we gave you in this last 7 months. We would be containing the $40 million hole that we had been seeing with the 10-cent fare increase, some of the constraints on cost, using the surplus stimulus funds, and those mitigating plans. How will we contain the snow deficit? We are working with the states, as I've talked to you before, looking to get a reimbursement. However, I will say that the expected reimbursement will not be 100% on expense. It never is. I do not expect to get recovery on revenue loss. So, in reality, if we are holding to the forecast that I have promised you of the $40 million and then expecting some kind of recovery on FEMA, I am anticipating that we will be coming in at the end of the year with a deficit position.
A deficit below where?
A deficit in the subsidy.
Right. Correct.
Usually we are a zero position like that. And I will have a better forecast on that next month, but I'm reluctant to say what that position will be because we're trying to figure out how to mitigate it if possible. The bright side is that we actually had been seeing ridership levels go up to where we were at budgeted levels. So that was the bright spot in January, and we didn't see that bright spot in February because of the snow. If we had normalized, we would have seen level ship of ridership that was leveling off to budget expectations. We are hoping that we come in the last quarter at that level as well.
We do have some preliminary March numbers, and actually I haven't shared these with Ms. Kissel yet, but the preliminary monthly ridership on rail, we don't have it for bus yet, is actually 6% above the previous fiscal year. 1% below budget, but we're definitely heading in the right direction. And then we've had the record ridership, of course, on the early days of this month related to the Cherry Blossom Festival and tourists. So we're looking good both on monthly and then average weekday. Again, we're 2% above our experience in FY09.
So when we look at those numbers, we're probably would take an awful lot to get back to our projections based upon both.
It would be difficult to get back to our forecast.
Do we have an expectation about the hearing back from the states in terms of what, if any, if they will do?
We will hear back. I'm hoping we hear back before the end of our fiscal year. So we have 3 months. And so if we can get some type of an understanding, even if we actually receive a check for reimbursement in the next fiscal year,
we need to know
for that in this fiscal year. So we expect to hear some type of number before the end of the year. I will say this, if we are in a deficit position, the expectation will be to draw on our line of credit in terms to meet operating expenses. So that's something that we have done maybe once or twice this year as a security measure, where we've been down to a balance in operating, not in capital, of about a $5 million level. We've drawn, just because on a $1.4 billion budget, $5 million is a little low. We've just drawn as a precaution and then have paid back the following day. However, I expect if we continue down this path, we will go into the next fiscal year with a draw position on that line. And I just wanted to note that.
You need to know that.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I did want to comment. Mr. Brown skipped over it very quickly. One is that we're having substantial increases in ridership that we're currently experiencing through the month of March. And two of our top ridership days, our second and third top ridership days, just occurred with ridership in the range of 900,000 trips a day on rail. That says that our riders are with us.
Yes.
And actually, there's a chart that we just put up that shows February. And we've marked out the section that was impacted by snow, but that again shows what you mentioned. The blue is the current year FY10. The red is 9, and you can see that we're above the last year's levels in many of those days. So I think the trend is in the right direction.
Good news numbers. Is there any other business, Mr. McKay?
I have a question. Page 94. You have given your description of expenses and personnel expense being over budget. The comment is made, 78% is due to higher than expected fringe rate. The remaining 22% is caused by an unbudgeted charge for DC workers' comp special assessment of $300,000 per month. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. Let me explain the first part on the health, on the fringe, on the health fee specifically. We actually had an unbudgeted item in this year on the health, so actually that's a cause of that. But the other issue is on the DC workers' comp. DC, we actually are one of the biggest companies in DC, so we have most of the workers' comp issues, and those claims are handled by the district in the district, and we actually get billed for their handling of those services. It has actually increased quite a bit, which we had not anticipated, by $2 million this year. That's the $300,000 you see a month. And that was unexpected, and that is hitting our budget this year.
What is the cause of it, though? Is it the cost of it, or is it the number of claims?
It's their cost to handle the claim, it is not the cost of the claim.
So it's the administration of the claim, and it's $300,000 per month.
Monitoring of our handling of the claims by the District of Columbia.
That's really.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Mr. Brand.
Monitoring of our claims by the District of Columbia.
It's the administration of the claim.
And so I mean, is there an opinion on that from WMATA's standpoint? Is that a reasonable
when the costs started to come in, it is high. I've asked our risk management to meet with the workers' comp people, which they have, and actually there's we've asked for a certain methodology, and they're in the process of getting that.
And is a part of that methodology going to give us a comparison of any type to the administrative costs elsewhere?
Well, the district, the Workers' Comp Administration program won't give us a comparison, but we are going to compare it with other jurisdictions or other properties and, you know, what it costs to administer the claim.
And do we know when we'll have that?
I should have that actually by the next meeting. They're in the process of doing that.
Okay. It obviously seems like an extraordinary cost in an environment where we're doing everything we can to reduce administrative costs in-house.
I understand.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I think that brings us to the end of our agenda.
Let me suggest that we take a lunch break until 1:30 and then run two committees in parallel. No? You want to start right now?
I agree with that.
Okay. Do you want to run two committees in parallel now, or do you want to wait until... Okay. Can we move the policy committee to the boardroom and do customer service in this room?